We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Glad you're with us today. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here. Mike Golic Sr. not here with us this morning, dealing with some stuff. He's all good.
Scheduled maintenance. As we always say, in these times right now, you've got to make abundantly clear that these are normal reasons to take a day off and not what everyone would immediately jump to on that.
So everything is good there. Hope everybody had a great, if you had the holiday weekend, everybody had a good 3 days, sort of rest, relax, and get going. Did you have a good weekend?
I did. Yeah, it was good. Good time to recharge the batteries. Obviously, yesterday a day to stop and think and remember the people that made the ultimate sacrifice and allowed us to come here and do a stupid radio show for 4 hours every morning. So it was good. Got a chance to talk to some of my friends from the climb, the Kilimanjaro climb that I went on with, through Chris Long's foundation, and some of the veterans that were on that hike. Got to check in with them yesterday on what was certainly, I know, a tough day for a lot of people. So was happy to do that. How was yours?
I did not talk to people that I wanted to climb with Kilimanjaro, so way to put me under the thumb right away.
Dealt with.
Suck it, nerd, basically is what you just said, so I appreciate that. I did talk to some friends of mine that I've known for a while, but I can't. You play that ace card right away, and now I'm dealing with a disadvantage.
I can say I didn't mean to lead with Trump. I realized with the Trump card
you
right
just
away.
You threw the ace of diamonds on me and said, "Take that, nerd."
That's a tough one right there. I did you dirty on that one. as you know, what? I'll give you the first round of takes this morning when we get to the topic we're getting ready to get into as a concession. Because now I feel bad. Now I feel like the green mushroom guy.
That's okay. I'm used to it. Trust me. I've been around here for a long, long time. So we actually, things are beginning to continue to trickle up. We saw some baseball facilities open up with players getting there. Of course, if they can just figure out the money part, guys, don't get hung up on the money part. There's a possibility that baseball could be coming back potentially as early as sometime next month. But there seem to be much more concrete plans towards resuming the NBA season. It seems like we have plans in place. And again, the NBA was the one that started this whole hard pause on sports for obviously the right reasons when Rudy Gobert tested positive. But Junior, it does feel like we're heading towards some sort of a resumption of the season in one particular place, which would be Disney World in Orlando.
Yeah, it seems like by all accounts, the league and the players union are in exploratory conversations with Disney to resume the 2019-2020 season in late July at the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex at Disney. So there's a Board of Governors call coming up that's really going to go through a lot of this stuff and try and give the real concrete details. But we mentioned it had kind of been between Vegas and Orlando for a while when it came to that. And as we went along with it, the more and more likely answer, the one that seemed to have less tentacles to it, was get everyone at the massive complex and all the facilities they've got at the Wild World of Sports, and let's roll the ball out.
And not only that, because of the massive complex, but because of certain controls you can have there that you can't have in Vegas. You're at this park, you are here. I think there's more of a containment situation that works better in Orlando than it does in Vegas.
Yeah, they certainly, and that's one of the conversations that has certainly come up, and we heard from Jared Dudley from the Lakers last week talking about the protocol around that and how they're going to address that. And there's going to be a lot of difficulty there, but there's also going to be difficulty in just the structure. What version of basketball are we getting? Are we getting a play-in tournament? Are we getting regular season games? Or, as it seems increasingly more likely, are we just going to get the top 16 and start playing playoff games?
So that's the really interesting thing part of this, right? You said a tournament and potentially plus. There may be some sort of round robin to get in, but once we get in, we're talking about a 16-team seed. Now, when you hear 16 teams seeded 1 through 16, there are two things that come to mind, right? Are we taking 8 from the East, 8 from the West, and then putting them 1 through 16? Or are we just going to do the thing where we take the top 16 teams?
Yeah. Now, thankfully for this season and this particular, which as we get more and more into this discussion, you'll see why siphoning it off to just this season is important.
Yes.
But just this year, the top eight, the top 16 records are the top eight teams in the West and the top eight teams in the East. So no team currently inside the playoffs right now in the standings would miss if anything were changed on all this. So the top eight teams right now, if you were to stop it, are going to be the top 16 teams in each conference.
And this is something that Adam Silver has wanted to do for a long time. He's wanted to try and push things and make it a little different. And what better time than now to just throw everything up against the wall and see what sticks? I want you to listen to Kendrick Perkins, obviously who played a long time in the league, on the idea of not having 8-8, but just putting in the best 16 teams and his explanation why.
Think about how many times, like in the Western Conference, where teams had a better record than most teams in the East and they didn't make the playoffs. So I think it would make it fair. And I think teams, you would look at changing that East being weak narrative. And I think it would be great for the league because now you have the 16 most best teams instead of the conferences. And I think it would be best for the league because now teams that are deserving to be in will be there. Because it was so many times, especially when I was playing in the Western Conference, where that 9th, 10th, and 11th spot were better. And if they were in the East, they would be in the 5th or 4th slot.
Okay, so obviously he's basically – now, again, it wouldn't apply to this year because 8-8 are the top 16 teams.
Yep.
And the best way I can try and relate this outside of the NBA is to go back to the 2008 NFL season. The New England Patriots finished that season 11-5 and famously did not make the playoffs. They were tied with the Miami Dolphins and lost a tiebreaker. Well, in the AFC alone that year, they had a better record than the AFC West San Diego Chargers, who finished 8-8. And then in the NFC, they had a better record than the NFC North winning Minnesota Vikings, who made the playoffs. The Arizona Cardinals, who won the NFC West, and the 9-7 Philadelphia Eagles, who also made the postseason. So that's the argument for saying we should always have the best 16 teams. Here's Brian Windhorst saying why that probably will never, ever happen, even in this sort of crazy train year we're dealing with in sports.
Any major change like this to the NBA would require 20 votes from the owners, 20 of 30 votes. And you're just not getting five Eastern Conference owners to vote the opportunity for them not to make the playoffs. I'm not saying they would do that this year. I'm saying 1 through 16 of the teams that have qualified for the playoffs. I think you're guaranteed, you're going to always be guaranteed to get 8 from each conference, Perk. But I will say this. I still think it's going to be a hard pass. I mean, it's something that they're going to try to get. But if you're Milwaukee, why would you vote for it this year? You might have to beat both the Clippers and the Lakers to win your title. If you're Boston, you're now a 5 seed. If you're Philadelphia, you're now a 12 seed.
The interesting part about this in the context of this year, because I agree with Brian, when you look at it from the Eastern Conference perspective, it would be kind of a hard sell, but we know if you were just going to go to the top 16 teams and start the playoffs, you would have a group of owners, and I heard this discussed, that would be looking at this situation saying, all right, what's best and most interesting for the league as we go into an unknown financial future to make sure we're the most interesting product we can possibly be? And does any part of that weigh on these guys enough to make them vote in favor of taking the same top 16 teams that we would have and just seeding them according to overall record rather than just East and West?
Well, look, remember, before this all hit in February and March in this country, Adam Silver was already doing that thing, looking ahead toward what can we make this more interesting? How can I be concerned about the bottom line? Because ratings were not what we thought they were going to be this year in the NBA. You could make the argument that a lot of that was LeBron left the Eastern Conference and went to the Western Conference, and people weren't staying up for those games as they were when he was in the Eastern Conference. But even before all of this hit, Adam Silver was trying to shake things up, and then he got pushback. So now, in this sort of crazy sort of place that we are, Adam should say, look, we got to try something, right? We need to do anything we can to put as much sizzle on this steak.
If you have a league that we've talked about as positionless and one that's governed by the stars so much that every year we've got player movement that's not necessarily bound by one conference or another. We just saw this big run, as you mentioned, of LeBron James and others going to the West. Kawhi Leonard goes east to west last year also. So you get this that changes so much. I get him wanting to guard against and say, what good is it having a playoffs if we have the chance of some of our best players, some of our stars, maybe being left out of that just because of the conference that that we're in. It probably applies less to the teams that would actually be left out of a playoff scenario like this. But in general, I understand we just want to take our best wherever they're at, because at this rate and in this day and age in the NBA, year to year, we don't know where they're going to be at.
Right. And I get why Milwaukee would have major pushback on this because of what Windhorst just said. But at the end of the day, we need to do the thing, or the NBA needs to do the thing, that is by far the most interesting and would pop the most eyes. And one thing we saw over the weekend on Sunday was golf doing something very different and very unique, albeit it wasn't on a championship or actual professional level, but it caught our attention. We'll have much more about that later as well. Coming up, all these ideas are great, but at the end of the day, it comes down to one thing for the NBA's return, and we'll hear from a Hall of Famer who thinks hard about that next. We'll get to it. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, as it says on my screen, ESPN New.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
The NBA prefers the Disney setup.
It's over 200 acres of land. There's three different venues in there for which you could play. But I think of the atmosphere feeling like an AAU atmosphere.
Golic and Wingo with you on a Tuesday morning. Hope you and yours are well and getting back to what would be a regular work week for most people. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here as we're, again, continuing to toy with the idea of what the NBA is looking at, the 16-game, 16-team format in one way, shape, or form, maybe with or without some play-in games going forward to finish up the end of the regular season. But it certainly doesn't look like, Junior, in either way, we're talking about a full completion of the regular season before the playoffs begin.
No, and I think that's going to be out of necessity because there are still, and we're at a point right now, we talk so much about all the different sports, the NFL, college football, yeah, the NBA, the NHL, and we keep saying it. We've been saying it. The NFL and the college and college football have the benefit of time. We're going to know and have a lot more available in August than we do right now. And so the NBA has got to deal with a lot of those limitations, I think, by making sure you're whittling this down to the most important part of this. Get the playoffs in, and we'll see what we can do with the rest.
Right. And by the way, we'll hear from some sound from the NFL a little bit later about some things that they are planning for that no other league is really planning for at this point. And a mea culpa from the NFL that I do not remember ever hearing from that organization in such an open and honest way, like, man, we really screwed that up. We'll get to that a little bit later.
Honest NFL is not usually something we get to say a lot.
Stay woke, Junior, because that is that one still sort of slapped me across the face like, oh, okay, we're having that conversation, which I respect them for. We'll get to that a little bit later. But we're dealing still with the idea of what happens when the NBA gets together. It looks like it's going to be in Orlando, and it's going to be some sort of 16-team playoff format going forward. So that's the game-playing format about this. But then there are the logistics of it, right? Getting people there, getting people contained. I think, as we said last segment, that's why they're looking at Disney, because there's better restrictions or easier restrictions about keeping people in certain places. But then everything in sports, whether it's Bundesliga back in Germany or the EPL or NBA or NHL, Major League Baseball, how do you deal with a test? How do you deal with a positive test for coronavirus? Here was Charles Barkley, who, by the way, by not playing, might have been the star of the match part two with Phil and Tom and Tiger and Peyton on Sunday on the Paul Feinbaum show about the idea of what would happen should, once we get into this bubble, there is a team with a positive test.
I think the one thing we got to do is, how are we going to handle if one of our players get infected? And that, to me, is the tricky part. I mean, you can't stop the playoffs. Like, I think a team's going to have to just forfeit a series if any of their players, not even their best player, gets the virus. You're going to have to sequester the entire team, and they're going to have to forfeit a round of the playoffs. They're going to be gone from the playoffs.
Well, I mean, that's certainly an extreme way of looking at it, and it may be something that plays out, but we've seen sort of this scenario with sports coming back, and I get it's not an apt comparison because one's a team sport, one's an individual sport. With the UFC, we had someone that tested positive, and they were able to still do the rest of the thing. So, I mean, I'm not sure I'm completely with Charles going down that road, because I think we're still trying to figure out how this is going to be dealt with and how they're going to sort of handle this situation.
Yeah, I think the way they go about the testing, what Charles brought up here, to me, illustrates how important all the other points are.
Right.
Meaning, they're not going to have a team forfeit the playoffs if a player tests positive. I don't think that's realistic or feasible, or something, quite frankly, that anyone involved is going to agree to. But it does underscore the idea that having everyone stay in the same spot.
Right.
And I heard, you know, Mina Kimes say this is not COVID-cella. You can't just leave, get your hand stamped, and go out of the park and then come back and expect things to be hunky-dory on this. If we're going to the playoffs, it's seeming more and more likely that the safest course of action is going to have to be guys quarantining for that period of time, people staying safely inside the confines of where they're asked to stay. I don't know how the family portion of that plays in, and I understand that's going to be difficult, but in the name of trying to finish this out with the information we currently have,
correct,
not the information we're going to have in August, not the information we're going to have in September, but the information we're going to have in the next couple of months, it could be a difficult set of protocol for these guys and maybe a little more restrictive than most want.
Yeah, let's be clear. Once we're going forward, it's kind of like the Omerta, right? In the mafia, in this thing of ours. Once you're in, you're in. You're not getting out. I mean, that's sort of the way you have to look at the playoff format going forward. You're in. Either you're in or you're out. And that, if you don't want to be in, that's fine. We understand that. And you know what? There may be some players and some teams that are going to have to deal with some players who may not want to go down that road. And that's understandable. But if you're in, you're all the way in.
And we heard Jared Dudley talking about that last week. The Lakers forward basically saying, we'd be wrapping LeBron James and AD in bubble wrap because
right.
We know those guys can't go anywhere, because if they get sick, then I know Charles was talking about a team having to forfeit, but we've had the conversation even before of, one of your star players gets this and has to sit out. You completely, it's like an injury. It's like, yeah, what we saw in the NBA Finals. You completely change the landscape of that. We know the effects of this are much more far-reaching potentially than someone dealing with a hamstring or a back or anything like that. But in principle, when it comes to the gameplay side of things, yeah, you'd be losing that person for the time being.
Yeah, I think there's two ways you have to look at this, and you're 100% right. We've talked about this before. There's the player that tests positive no matter whom he is. It would be just like Kevin Durant on one level blowing out his Achilles in the playoffs. Okay, that person is out. Does it change the dynamic of how the finals would play out? Absolutely, but it happens all the time in sports. The next question is, how do you deal with the potential next level of this, right? Because I think once someone tests positive, you're going to have to keep testing people until you find out they either haven't or have gotten it. And that's the next layer of this thing, which is different.
Yeah, a blown out hamstring or Achilles isn't highly contagious.
Yes.
And that's what the NBA dealt with on the front end of this. Remember, after Rudy Gobert and everything happened with the Jazz, it was the contact tracing of, all right, what team played who and when, and how soon can we get them tested? If you had a playoff setting like this, where all of a sudden a player tests positive, I doubt you're going to see a by that team, but what you'd probably see is an immediate round of testing for
correct
everyone on their team, everyone on the opposing team, and then an assessment from there going forward in that, ensuring that the next time these guys see the court, they're only doing so if they've passed a test. And as we look at how people negotiate this going forward, because people are certainly cognizant of the limited number of tests available to the public, not wanting to dig too much into that in a way that's irresponsible, what we've seen is that idea of, all right, you monitor symptoms for a lot of guys as best you can. You test when everyone's coming back in, and that underscores the importance again. If you test everyone coming into the park, and then from there, it's an area where they've got to stay somewhat enclosed, somewhat away from the rest of this group, like we saw from the USC inside of their event, then I think you can more adequately address when instances like this come up. I know that's a huge concession on the part of the players, though, and that's something I can't, in all fairness, tell another group of people, this is how you're supposed to operate, because it's not my life.
No, you're 100% correct, because at the end of the day, everyone has to have their level of comfort with the possibilities, right? And we infamously heard Blake Snell on Twitch say, if I get the Rona, it's in my body forever. And everyone's got to decide, where's that line of demarcation for them?
Yeah, how much risk they're willing to tolerate, and that also goes to the lifestyle you're willing to live for however long this playoff stretch is. Am I willing to maybe be separated from my family? Am I willing to have to maybe stay in a more confined space than I would like to for that time? That's also the risk-reward that's got to be weighed here in addition to just the normal health protocol.
And then, of course, for a lot of players, there is the monetary side. With the more games I play, the more money I'm going to make, and as you said, going forward, we're not so sure how that's going
to
play out.
Yeah, we're talking to Brian Windhorst in a little bit. I'll be very interested to hear from that what the financials should be like for the players involved if they were to just go to the postseason model.
Absolutely. So again, we're heading towards that being a possibility, but still details to be worked out in the NBA. But coming up next, why the NFL is saying, wow, did we get that wrong?
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
Well, we thought it was going to do one thing, and then it didn't. So we're saying goodbye to it. Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you this morning. Hope your Tuesday's off to a good start. Junior, let me just say, first and foremost, I have to applaud the NFL here because, you know, they sometimes take a lot of grief for shadow getting around certain things that didn't go their way and all this kind of stuff. I mean, you want to talk about owning it. You read it in SportsCenter. Troy Vincent, executive vice president of the league, longtime player in the NFL, cornerback for a long time. Again, acknowledged in an interview with NBC Sports at the league and quoting here, failed miserably, end quote, in implementing that pass interference replay review and went on to say, we failed. I'm first in line. I shared that with league officials. I failed as the leader of that department. I failed. We cannot allow that to happen again. What do we learn from that? We've got to do our due diligence. You can't rush and just shove something in there without knowing all the consequences. And he went on and on and on. So I do applaud them right away. I might take a little bit of an exception with you can't just rush and shove something in there and do our due diligence, because you can make the argument, as it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, you can make the argument that they could have done the thing, they just sort of decided to not really go down that road.
Yeah, listen, I want to hear this from Marcus Spears, because he was very adamant about this. This is from earlier on SportsCenter. Marcus Spears talking about him being glad this rule is gone and why. And the why is what I think I disagree with most.
It did not work, and it didn't work for one simple reason. This game will never be rid of mistakes, not only by players, but referees as well. I was very, very critical of refs because of the non-ability to come out publicly and say, we got this wrong. But they answered that call. They started doing it. Now you do away with this rule and let it be judgment, and I like that better for the game.
I think this didn't work for one reason and one reason alone, and that's because that group of refs didn't want it to, because Al Riveron and these referees decided we're not going to overturn any of these calls, even in situations where the outside world looked and saw it was obvious. So I look at this and say, all right, if this group of people, the ones in this question that we've said over and over, these measures are there to help and aid, are going to rebut this, how do we expect the Sky Judge to go much better?
Well, we'll get to the Sky Judge part of this in a second, because I think that's interesting. But this rule, to me, really ended on November 17th of last year. That was the game between the Texans and the Ravens, that the Ravens went on to win 41-7. But in the first half of that game, the Texans threw a ball into the corner of the end zone, and DeAndre Hopkins was essentially undressed by Marlon Humphrey, tackled him in the end zone. It was as obvious, maybe even more blatant, than the infamous Nickell Robey Coleman play of the Rams against the Saints wide receiver in the NFC Championship game that led to this rule being implemented in the first place. It was obvious to everyone who had vision, whether on the field or on television, that that was the most blatant pass interference one could ever have, and they challenged it, the Texans did, and they were not rewarded the penalty, which was obvious. As soon as that happened, I knew this rule had no chance of continuing.
I mean, and we had a number of those over the course of last year. It was borderline embarrassing after a while because to me, it was a clear, we're not going to play with your bleeping call, reversal of our calls on the field. It seemed like an act of defiance by and large, and whether that was the crews on the field or Al Riveron overseeing all of this. So I thought it was laughable, quite frankly, that the league let the referees hijack a rule that was well-intentioned and one that, again, when we talk about what's going forward with the Sky Judge, it's in the name of common sense. It's yes. In the name of what we all see. I understand what Marcus is saying, that these officials are always going to be human. That's the concession here. We want to help. We're giving everyone a chance to get this right, and just because the call was coming from the coaches on the field to review it, I don't know if there was a feeling of disdain towards that from the referees or where it came from, but that seemed like an open act of defiance, and the referees got to win.
Yeah, and I think by winning, they actually lost. Right? Because in their mind, we won because we're not going to do this thing, whether we think it was Al Riveron or somebody else. They basically felt like, hey, we're going to decide when we implement this rule. But by doing that, I think they actually lost. And I think everybody can see that now. And I told this story last week when I talked to a former official who now is watching the games for a living as opposed to being on the game. And he said, I thought we were really good, but I can't believe how bad we actually are. And last summer, I was flying back from L.A. with one of the members sitting next to me. He was doing stuff on his computer. I knew he was NFL related, so we started a conversation. He was an official, and he was one of the officials that was on the field during the 2018 NFC Championship game between the Saints and the Rams. And he said none of them on the field saw it the way we saw it. And once they saw it on TV, they were like, whoa. And that's when he thought the idea of the Sky Judge might be something that could benefit them. And I think that's the mindset that needs to change. For those that don't understand, one of the proposals that will be discussed on Thursday in the virtual meeting for the NFL is the idea of what we've talked about for a year now, that somebody who's an official part of the crew on the field will watch the game the way that we all watch the game, which is the benefit of slow motion, high def cameras all over the field, because it is a completely different experience being field level and having sort of a flat line version of the game, as opposed to having a 360 all-encompassing view of the game. It changes things dramatically. And I think the only way for the officials to sort of understand how we are perceiving the information and the pictures that they're not getting is to have someone on that crew experiencing the game the way we experience it.
And maybe that's the only reason this has a fighting chance is now it's one of them, mm-hmm. Right?
Like
last year it was a coach's challenge that had to trigger this, and I don't know if it's the friction that naturally exists in that relationship or what, but that's the only reason, because what we're essentially saying is, you want someone to bail out the officials on the field, understandably, when they get caught in a blind spot.
Yeah.
That's what the challenge was supposed to be last year, but we saw, including playoffs last year, there were 98 pass interference challenges from the coaches and Booth combined. 81 were coaches' challenges, 68 of the coaches' challenges were upheld, only 13 were reversed, so about 16%. And like you mentioned, the ones that weren't reversed were some glaring cases. Like, there were some where we were coming in Monday, and one of the first things we were talking about was, well, this rule is just never going to work because they don't want it to.
Right, and what's interesting, it was, to me, I would love to see if we can get the breakdown on this, because I think after that November 17th game between the Texans and the Ravens, we certainly saw a lot more ticky-tack pass interference calls actually be upheld, or non-calls be upheld, including one between the Chiefs and the Raiders in that game at Arrowhead, where John Gruden is still losing his mind, right? I think that was the line of demarcation. After that didn't happen, people were sort of like, I give up, I can't believe this is ridiculous. And it did feel after that, the officials and the officiating crew were like, yeah, maybe we need to start throwing some of these. And I feel like they were a little more after that, right? Did you get that same perception?
I thought so. It seemed like one of those things that they had really decided so much early on in that one. Chris Mortensen, our ESPN NFL insider, went on yesterday talking about why he believes the NFL is moving on from this version of the Booth Review.
Well, when it was voted in a year ago, it was voted in for only 1 year, and it was on a trial basis. So let's, it was a matter of let's see how it goes. It didn't go well. I mean, there's an old saying that this game is played by humans, officiated by humans, coached by humans, and that you're going to have some human error in any layer that you have, even in replay, as we saw. And that was one thing that bared itself during the season. Even in replay, you will have controversy. The bottom line that I've always been told is they need to make sure the officiating on the field gets the egregious call right. And they didn't in that Saints-Rams playoff game that led to this particular one-year trial rule. And I think one of the things you'll see is better communication among the officiating groups that work together week to week.
I love one thing. I mean, Mort is just the best. Egregious is a word that really sometimes people throw around, but egregious seems like the most perfect word to use in how this thing all played out.
Because it's what these were. Again, it's what we've been talking about with the Sky Judge for so long, and I really hope that now, because this is something that has been discussed for so long, like we talked about the Sky Judge last year and it ended up getting tabled.
What's been a longer NFL conversation, the Sky Judge or Dak's contract? Discuss.
At this point, Dak is getting ready to lap the Sky Judge right now on the track for this one, and I'm sure he's ticked about it. But you look at that, and I don't know if maybe they've had more time to get comfortable with that idea, maybe going through what is going to be a probably similar process to what the Sky Judge were being, except from where it is triggered no longer from the coaches, but merely from a guy who's a part of your crew. Like, I don't know if that familiarity might be the difference or not of saying, all right, these referee crews are like teams. They spend a ton of time with each other during the season. There's a ton of communication. And maybe now, because he's one of us, we'll actually be willing to listen and assess this, as opposed to last year where it was just open defiance.
Right. I think that's the point. I think for this to have any merit going forward with the Sky Judge, I think the officials need to have a 180 in the way they think about things. This is not a way of saying you're doing a bad job. It's a way of saying we want to help you do a better job, right? Sometimes changing someone's perception is the most important thing. And I do agree with you. I felt like last year, maybe they felt like they were being attacked and was coaches' challenges. And maybe that framed the prism through which they saw this. But as you said, if it's one of theirs, it's one of their guys that's in the crew meetings that goes through all the stuff together and is part of their inner circle that says, hey, hold up, I think we need to take a look at this. I think that may help them understand we're not trying to punish you. We're trying to help you do your job better.
We're trying to keep you from being the headline.
Correct.
Right? Like I said, by and large, officials are offensive linemen. If you don't know they were on the field after the game was played, life is pretty good and most all of them are going to sleep well at night.
Right.
That's generally how those positions tend to operate, because you're just trying to avoid the big mistake. And that's all this is done in the interest of. And hopefully, you know what? If we get to the Sky Judge and it goes really well this preseason and it eventually gets us one step closer to having that fail safe in there, and it's a way the officials are more comfortable with, I'm fine with what's happened here. Right. I was super critical of, I thought the officials being borderline petulant with this last year. But if it gets us to this greater good in a way that they're comfortable with, maybe meeting halfway is what matters. Everyone wants to feel valued and heard. I get that. And so maybe this is that interest.
Think about it this way. Think about the infamous touchdown catch that wasn't called a touchdown in that Steelers-Patriots game, what, in 2018, Jesse James, where he crossed the goal line.
Oh, yeah.
And the ball was sort of moving a little bit, and it was called a touchdown, and then it was taken off the board, and then Ben threw the interception, and that was the end of that game. And we realized, guys, that was a touchdown. There's just no way around it. That was a touchdown. It got us to a common-sense perspective, and hopefully now, with what we've seen and how it wasn't called, the Sky Judge can help us get to a common sense perspective on how this is perceived by the officials. All of that is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Speaking of compromise, there may not be any compromise in one school's mind when it comes to whether or not college football will be played. We'll get to that after What's Trending.
Get caught up on a little bit of what's going on in the rest of the world of sports. Good news, former basketball Hall of Famer and current Georgetown head coach Patrick Ewing is back home after a hospital stay for coronavirus. Ewing informed ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski that he returned home after spending that past weekend hospitalized. Ewing's son, Patrick Jr., tweeted that his father's symptoms are being watched and that he is now, quote, home and getting better. The 57-year-old Ewing was the only member of Georgetown's basketball program to test positive for the virus. So certainly happy that Patrick Ewing back and it seems to be on the road to what we hope to be a full recovery. Meanwhile, the EPL teams are pushing for a Friday night restart in June, but it's becoming increasingly unlikely that the league will resume play on its target date of June 12th, sources tell ESPN FC. The league's now hoping to return either June 19th or the 26th, according to ESPN FC. Meanwhile, the top women's league in England canceled the remainder of their season. The English Football Association says a decision was taken to end the Women's Super League with immediate effect following, quote, overwhelming feedback from the clubs and to give the chance to, quote, prepare and focus on next season. Manchester City was leading the league by a point from Chelsea, which had a game in hand. And the match averaged nearly 6 million viewers, according to Turner Sports. With an average of almost 5.8 million viewers across four networks, Turner says the match Champions for Charity was the most watched golf telecast in cable history. It said the previous record was 4.9 million on ESPN at the 2010 Masters, the year Tiger returned to golf for the first time since the scandal that rocked his personal life. Woods and Peyton Manning scored a one-up victory over Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady at Medalist Golf Club in Hope Sound, Florida, a match that featured high entertainment with shots and words, along with, most importantly, raising $20 million for COVID-19 relief. What's Trending is brought to you by Redbox. The greatest mystery of all time is now streaming on Redbox. Don't miss the theatrical home release of Scoob. Discover Scooby-Doo's epic destiny and stream this premium rental with Redbox On Demand today.
So, funny, those highest two ratings ever for golf, included Tiger Woods and Tiger Woods.
Huh, how about that? Just, a decade apart, by the way.
I, for one, am shocked.
Go figure that that's still a thing. That Tiger is, again, in that sport, he doesn't move the needle. He is the bleeping needle. So understand that going forward. And that's why we're going to have, hopefully, the match, the third part. And we'll get to that in a discussion about it a little bit later. Golden Ringo is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal Credit Union has a mission to put members first by making their financial goals the priority. Learn more at NavyFederal.org and join today. So we had a week last week, Junior, where it seemed like a lot of university athletic directors and schools and conferences were basically deciding, hey, I think we're going to push this thing forward, right? We had the SEC basically saying, if you can open up, you're going to open up. The NCAA said, we're going to lift that moratorium on May 31st, and you can have people in if they're in accordance with the guidelines. The ACC basically said, you guys do what you want, and there's all that kind of stuff. But then there's the idea of one school president who has a big-time football program that is pretty much drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah, so the University of Michigan's president, Dr. Mark Schlissel, came out and said, if there is no on-campus instruction, there won't be intercollegiate athletics, at least for Michigan. Some degree of doubt as to whether there will be college athletics anywhere, at least in the fall. This is a pretty seismic statement from one of the blue bloods in college football.
Correct.
And as we've talked about this, about what might happen going forward, I think we all just kind of assumed these big money blue chip programs will be the ones first in line lining up. But it's a reminder, the people that we assume are in charge and that have always been aren't going to be the ones making the call here.
Absolutely. And again, we've sort of talked about this, and Bob Bowlsby, the director of the Big 12, was on with us basically. And he said, look, people are going to have to understand that this is going to be a moving target. Not everybody's going to be starting at the same time. Not everybody may be playing as many games. It's going to be very sort of all over the place, not only depending on where you live and where your school is and what the restrictions are there, but how comfortable your university from the top is going to be comfortable with this. And obviously, University of Michigan is feeling pretty firmly about their perspective here. And Ryan McGee and Marty McGee Smith's America, the podcast, basically was on with Golden Wingo and said, basically, it's coming down to these guys and nobody else.
All due respect to our friends who are the most powerful college football coaches in the history of the game. All due respect to our friends who are the commissioners and who are the athletic directors and, you know, the trainer and the nutritionist and everybody who has said what they think might happen with college football. It comes down to the university presidents. And all that money that you're talking about and that $4 billion, that is a drop in the bucket compared to the concern of the university president that has 50,000 undergrads, and they all write tuition checks. That's what those presidents are worried about. And at the end of the day, if the president of the university says, everybody's taking online classes, do not move into your dorm in August, then that's what's going to happen, and that includes the 100 guys on the football team. That's just how it's going to be.
So the interesting thing there is obviously it's going to be different for a lot of people, but the other thing, Mike, that I can't just get around, it's all going to be driven by the sanctity of what affects that money and what affects that stuff coming in, right? Because obviously the athletic directors and the coaches are very concerned about what happens to college sports if football isn't played because it carries the entire sports program. But university presidents are like, wait a minute, what are we opening ourselves up to litigiously, and are we willing to risk all that other money from tuition coming in if we sort of rush things back?
I am a monster because every time a headline like this comes up and we heard from Jim Harbaugh on this, I just assume it's Michigan trying to figure out a way to make sure they don't lose to Ohio State this year. I cannot quit this. I am sorry. I am a child and a monster. But the interesting part about this is we talked about it last week in relation to that great article that went up on .com
right.
detailing the financials. Mm. And the one thing it said, and I thought the analogy that's most apt that we used is, college athletics, and specifically the moneymakers, are your university's front porch. They're what advertise, and in a lot of cases, help increase, you know, the amount of applications that you're getting to your school, depending on how successful your program can be. Would a program and a university like Michigan be willing to forsake that? Would they be willing to fall behind their competitors? And I bring Ohio State and the rest of the Big Ten storied programs up in that. And because most importantly, the question I had, and I heard Will Cain bring this up, is, would college football be willing to press forward without some of their blue bloods? And I think we've seen so far, they're willing to trudge forward with whoever they've got.
Yeah.
Because most people seem to be under the idea that if we don't have some version of this, it's going to be more catastrophic than we can absorb, even more catastrophic than Michigan saying we can't afford to take that risk.
Well, I think the phrase that makes the most sense here is by any means necessary, right? And the needle is going to be all over the place. There are very few cities and states that have been hit as hard as Boston, Massachusetts. Boston College has already said, we are going to open up and we're going to have our campuses on in the fall. We have the Pac-12, and a lot of people are wondering with the splintering of the California state schools, not UC Davis, not UC Berkeley, not UCLA, but basically saying we're going to be basically online classes for the most part in California. What's going to happen to the Pac-12? University of Oregon, big player in the Pac-12, power team in that conference, has already said, we plan on opening up in the fall. It is going to be all over the place, and there's not going to be any consensus about this. And I think the one thing we can say about college football in the fall, that's the thing that we know.
Yeah, I hope and pray if you are a fan of college football that your team's coach and athletic director have a great relationship with your university president, because that's going to be, I think, more pertinent and more appropriate than ever.
Coming up in a tribute to our producer, he wrote this. There were irons, tigers, and dares, oh my. The match 2. What can we make of the match 3? Next, Golic and Wingo.